non-rock a boatus must stop. I don't want to rock the boat. I want to sink it.
Are you going to bark all day, little doggy, or are you going to bite?
Brett, delusional
is okay in your worldview. I'm an animal. You don't chastise chickens for being delusional. You don't chastise pigs for being delusional. So you calling me delusional using your worldview is perfectly okay. It doesn't really hurt. She hung up on me.
Yes!
Oh!
Like what?
What?
Desperate times call for faithful men and not for careful men. The careful men come later and write the biographies of the faithful men, lauding them for their courage.
Go into all the world and make disciples. Not go into the world and make buddies. Not to make brosives.
Right.
Don't go in the world and make homies.
Right.
Disciples.
I got a bit of a jiggle neck. That's a joke, Pastor.
No, when we have the real message of truth, we cannot let somebody say they're speaking truth when they're not.
Take an amazing journey to a place that will blow your mind and move your heart so you will never be the same again.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of Apologia Radio. This is the gospel heard around the world. Thank you guys for tuning in. Very exciting and interesting show today. We're going to talk about Thanksgiving, the real first Thanksgiving.
The real first.
Is actually a really cool thing to do a week after Thanksgiving just to prepare you for next year. So you guys will know going into it what it's actually all about and the whole history. So we're a week after Thanksgiving, yes, but very important information. And really cool stuff, believe me, because I think we're too often distracted by how the modern educational system has talked about the first Thanksgiving, the first people that came over, the communities planting, what they believed about the world, the Christian worldview, all that stuff. So there it is. I'm Pastor Jeff, they call me the Ninja. That is Luke the Bear right there.
What up?
Luke the Bear, and there you go. Oh, sorry about that. Okay, here we go. So go to apologiastudios.com to get more, APOLOGIA studios.com. Just so you guys know, as you see right here on Apologia Studios channel, whether you're on Facebook or you're on YouTube, you'll see that we have all of our content, whether it's doing evangelism, whether it's teaching, whatever the case may be, and Abortion Now stuff. We just dropped an entire film, Babies Are Still Murdered Here, that is available for everybody for free everywhere online. We have hundreds of radio episodes and podcasts available at apologiastudios.com. Everything's just available to everybody. Just grab one, listen to them, start at the beginning. There's a lot to get through. Tons of great stuff, tons of great guests. But we also have Apologia All Access, and that is for all of our ministry partners to partner together with us to produce all of this content. So whether it's videos going out to Mormons to reach them with the gospel, or to Jehovah's Witnesses, or it's in the area of abortion, whatever the case may be, if it's something that's an Apologia Studios for the world to see, our Apologia All Access partners are doing that together with us. And so what we do is we have Apologia All Access. It's a way for you guys to be a part of this ministry with us, and you also get the TV show, the after show, Apologia Academy, and all the other goodies that are there at apologiastudios.com. So partner with us by signing up to Apologia All Access today and be a part of all that God is doing with this particular ministry. Do make sure that none of your giving affects the giving towards your local church. But partner with us. Lots of big things in store for next year, 2020. I think it's going to be our biggest year yet in terms of, in one area, the fight for End Abortion Now.
Yes.
I really believe that next year is the year where we've laid a foundation where we may be able to work to see either sanctuary city, a legitimate sanctuary city, end of abortion in a city or a state, or us getting to the point where now we cause enough righteous controversy to get everyone to start to think that way. So we're working that direction right now. And by the way, endabortionnow.com is where you guys go to get your local church signed up. You guys get free training, free resources. We give everything away to you guys. And you'll get access to the app, the system we have where all of our almost 500 churches can communicate with each other on a moment by moment basis. And so that's all there for you guys. And actually I saw, hey Luke, do you know this? I saw Marcus filming his portion for our media training for the churches.
Oh yeah.
Do you know if that's up yet?
I
think so.
It's possible. So we also are training churches how to begin their own media ministry to reach people with the gospel in the area of abortion. And all that's there at endabortionnow.com for all of our churches. So I actually sit down in one of the videos or two of the videos, and I actually explain how to work the platform social media-wise so you can communicate most effectively on those platforms with the gospel. And then Marcus actually works some other details in terms of the video equipment you can choose from, some on the lower end of the spectrum of expensive or inexpensive to, you know, more expensive. So all that is there at endabortionnow.com. So big intro, just to sort of update everybody as to what's going on. Pray for us as a ministry. Big stuff happening with all the ministries that God is doing here at Apologia. So just be in prayer for that, and I'll give it to the bear.
All right. Well, I'm super excited about this episode. Just to kind of give some history behind this, the reason I wanted to do this, it's funny because I saw the article, and it was like, I think it was Wednesday of last week, right before Thanksgiving, and it came, I think it was Time, if I remember correctly, it was a Time magazine article, and it was like this completely bogus, like, social justice leftist view of Thanksgiving. And so I immediately hit up our guest who I'm going to introduce in a second, Zach Lautenschlager, who has an awesome last name and an even more awesome beard. he's a good friend of ours. We've known him, oh gosh, about a year and a half, I think now. And we've done a lot of work with him behind the scenes. We're going to be doing a lot more work with him behind the scenes as well, hopefully in the near future. But Zach was out here, taught a leadership class for us here, I think about a year and a half ago. Right. And I couldn't help but notice his incredible knowledge of U.S. history from a Christian perspective. And I
right.
was like, wow, like he has some really cool stories. So I immediately hit Zach. I was like, hey, would you love to come on the show and talk about the real Thanksgiving? He was like, yeah, absolutely. So that's kind of what spurred this on. But Zach, I'll go ahead and let you introduce yourself to our audience.
Well, thanks, brothers. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm Zach Lautenschlager. I serve as the vice president in my day job as the National Association for Gun Rights.
Yeah, yeah.
Right on.
4 million members nationwide, and it's good work. Recently relocated to Utah. No, I'm not LDS, but it's a great state. And
it is.
Many Mormon and LDS friends. So it's a pleasure to be here. We're part of the Orthodox Presbyterian Church, and are attending Berean OPC here in Cloverfield.
Which is Jason Wallace's church.
What's that?
Jason Wallace's church, correct?
That's correct, yes. In fact, there are two OP churches here. Jason pastors Christ Presbyterian down in Magna, but then he also preaches up here. We're in between pastors right now.
Yeah, you look like a pilgrim. I just want you to know that. Legitimately.
Well, thank you. I take that as a compliment.
Yeah, you look like you could be sitting at the first Thanksgiving table for sure.
An Irish pilgrim.
Yes.
I give my wife a hard time. I'll brush the beard out and kind of get the John Smith look. You know, he wasn't a pilgrim. Although, you know that they did try to hire him before they hired Miles Standish.
Did not yep. know that.
It was actually Smith who had mapped all of Cape Cod, and that was so before they left Leiden. They contacted Smith and asked him, and he was actually interested. But when they got to know him, they said, "Boy, look out, that guy's a little bit of an egotist."
Okay.
They were afraid he'd become a tyrant. And so they hired Miles Standish instead, who has a very interesting history. Standish had a similar background. He fought in the Netherlands at the same time Smith did. I don't know if they knew one another. But just some fun connections there. But
yeah,
I do enjoy the facial hair.
Well, you're in good company because we love it here too. Yes.
Indeed, brothers.
That's
indeed.
Right.
It's a pleasure. So, you know, there's a lot of revision, and there has been for a long time. Obviously, if you don't like God and you don't like his word, then you really don't like American history either. And so, of course, you're going to want to rewrite it or reinterpret it. And judge those who perhaps did love God and did try to serve him in past more harshly than we would judge others. So, you know, we can, some of our fellow Americans who perhaps share a more Marxist worldview are going to look at Che Guevara and praise him for fighting for liberty and freedom, even though the dude was an executioner. He was Castro's executioner.
Mm.
And then we're going to look at, you know, at William Brewster or Bradford or Miles Standish and say, what terrible people, because, you know, because they happen to be you know, fought the Indians or were allied with one tribe against another. And so, you know, it's always correct to look back and say, well, there is no golden age. We don't believe in a golden age. I certainly don't. Not of anything. We're talking about fallen, sinful human people. Mm-hmm. And we get I get excited when I see the grace of God and the providence of God working in their lives, because we look at that and we say, well, cool, maybe God can work through my life too. Maybe God can use me in my time. You know, when I was growing up, I grew up a homeschool kid, and I used to opine that I was not born 200, 300, 400 years ago because I love those times. Mm. But I have come to recognize that our time is just as exciting, and there are glorious opportunities. That's why I'm privileged to work in politics full time. It's what I do, not only with the National Association for Gun Rights, but also with my full service consulting business. So I run campaigns, I run legislative operations, and I fundraise. And I love American history. And so the opportunity, no matter what God has called us to do, to learn the principles that work and to apply them in our own lives, to lead our, if we're men, to lead our wives, or to prepare to do so. If women work in not only working with your husband, but working with him to lead the family. That's part of it. It is a leadership team from my perspective. Mm. And to follow and serve as we are all called to do. You know, and for kids who may hopefully are watching, it is such an exciting time. It is such an exciting time to be alive. Yes, there are challenges. Yes, there are dangers. But that's what makes it cool. That's what makes it cool. And it's certainly not a boring time by any stretch of the imagination. So.
Absolutely not. Well, let's talk about that thirsty Thanksgiving, that first Thanksgiving. Yeah.
It's an interesting point, right?
Yeah.
Because the Pilgrims are always painted as dour, sour-faced. You know, we hate fun.
Right.
And that's hogwash. Number one, they weren't even Puritans. They were separatists. Mm-hmm. Brownists is what they were called originally for the first 200 years. Mm-hmm. And so there was drinking at the first Thanksgiving. If they had anything alcoholic to drink, I guarantee they drank it. We don't know for sure if they did. But they loved good music. They loved good beer. They loved good things. Miles Standish wore a red cape. And so, you know, I think the foundation of the whole thing, you know, it's easy to go back too far maybe, and all history is interconnected for me, so I have a hard time just talking about one thing. But we hear, usually you kind of hear two things. If you grew up in a Christian worldview, you hear that the Puritans came, or the Pilgrims came here for religious freedom. And we think, oh, that's so they could pick what church they go to. No, the reality is it's so that they could live life the way God believed it should, mm-hmm. the way they believed God had commanded them to live it. And not be thrown into jail where they would starve to death because you weren't fed in prison. Someone from outside had to feed you. And there were Brownists, and that's what they have been called, people who followed a pastor, a separatist pastor named Brown. They were thrown in prison and starved to death, or they had to go into hiding. William Brewster, one of the first leaders of the Pilgrims, had published documents propounding the gospel, expounding on the gospel, and criticizing those in authority who were commanding unbiblical and tyrannical things, and he had to go into hiding. So, you know, from that perspective, it's so much more than just, oh, so you can pick a church and read your Bible. No, it's so that you can live life.
Wow.
And that's why they left England. Of course, then you've got the other side who loves to talk about the fact that, no, they're really just evil capitalists who came to enslave and abuse and, you know, and kill Indians and hurt people and rape the land. And that's the other side. Neither are the case. These are people who read their Bibles and said, hey, God expects us to apply this to every area of life, and so we're going to start doing this. And then very quickly discovered that in their culture, that was not acceptable. And so they started looking for other places. Of course, they went to Holland first, and we know they stayed there. And then eventually they embarked on two ships. One of them started to sink, possibly through sabotage. And so they all crowded onto the Mayflower, 102 people on a 120-foot vessel.
Wow.
So you're talking just absolutely standing room only, where they spent 2 months.
2 months standing room. That's insane.
Wow.
Good grief.
Barely room to lay down. And of course, you talk about living that close with that many people, 100 people, on a 120-foot ship.
Wow.
They're seasick. They get diseases, you know, they get stomach complaints and illnesses that, that go with everything that goes with that, that come with everything that goes with that. And so that's what the voyage was like. It was not easy. It wasn't horrible. And it wasn't that different from any other seafaring voyage, other than you have a lot of passengers. And that was 102 passengers plus the 40-man crew.
Wow.
Okay.
So it's 2 months at sea. Then they land, and they, of course, they were headed for the Virginia colony, where they had authority. And of course, Virginia went all the way up to almost New York. So they got blown off course, and they made landfall at Cape Cod, which is the hook that sticks out. If you look at a map of Massachusetts, that's the bottom part of Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
They landed there, and they spent another month out on that, basically on that sandbar, most of them on the ship, while the men, some of the men explored and found, tried to find a place. They went aboard, went ashore on Cape Cod, and there were already inhabitants there who came out and were, you know, were aggressive. There were no fatalities on either side. But it's an important point to note that the Pilgrims didn't just show up and say, "Well, let's kill everyone here and take their land," which is basically what you hear from
exactly.
No, that's ridiculous. They landed and said, "Oh, there are people here. Let's go someplace else."
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't that hard. Now, yes, they were concerned about being attacked because the relationship between Europeans and Native Americans at this point was not good. You have to recognize it had been 100 years. There had been 100 years of back and forth. Huh. Some of it good, but a lot of it bad on both sides. And there were many Europeans who did come here and did do evil things and stole and hurt people. That's true. But what makes the Pilgrims unique and remarkable is that their attitude was completely different. They respected the people here. And so they looked for a place where, let's find a place where there's nobody living right now. Maybe nobody has a claim on this land. And so they went inside Cape Cod Bay and landed at what is now Plymouth. The Indian name for the place was Patuxet. And it was abandoned. There were some clearings there. There were tumbled down buildings. And there were lots and lots and lots of graves and even exposed remains. Because that village had died.
Wow.
Possibly wiped out by disease, most likely don't know. The only surviving Patuxet resident that we know of was Tisquantum. There may have been a few others that weren't recorded in history. Well, he went down in history and was popularized in the 1900s as, or excuse me, 1800s as Squanto. And so they found this land where there was you know, it was open, and there were four or five rivers coming down to the sea. And there was a hilltop that was good for defense, ready-made. So they decided to settle there. Now, many people know the name William Bradford. He was the second governor of Plymouth Colony Bay.
Right.
Or Plymouth Bay Colony, excuse me. And so he's about 35 at this point, between 30 and 35. And while they're there, on that expedition where they found Patuxet, which had become Plymouth, Bradford's 26-year-old wife, and they have a little boy, she falls overboard out, and this is early December, it's about now, and dies. She drowns, and he doesn't find out about it until he gets back.
Ugh.
Four other people perish there, and those were the five deaths at sea. One died on the voyage. They row over, they land at Patuxet, they unload the stuff, they start building shelter, but it's now Christmas. They started building the common building on Christmas Day on the 25th. Of course, they wouldn't have recognized that as Christmas. That was abhorrent to them because it had become an enforced holiday
right.
by the Church of England.
Yes.
So, but that was the day they started building. And now, of course, over the winter, and this is something that we all hear about, right? Everyone hears that a lot of them died. Well, 102 people, 45 of them perished during that.
Wow.
During that winter.
During that first winter.
During that first winter. Wow.
There were only three families that did not suffer some death in the family.
Mm. Wow.
And several families that were wiped out to one.
Wow.
One man, one woman, a child who was left. Now, to our ears, that is just almost unimaginable. You have to understand that that was very tough for them. That was extremely high. Extremely high mortality rate. But you are talking about a different time. Mm-hmm. And in Europe during this time, and for hundreds of years before this, it was not uncommon for large numbers of people to die. Bradford himself was an orphan. His father died when he was very young, and so he was with his mother, and then he went to live with his grandfather, who died, and so then he went back to live with his mother and her new husband, and then she died, And by the time he was 10, he was an orphan. And so he was actually taken in by William Brewster. And Brewster had also taken in other children, some of whom died on the voyage, but who had no place to go. And so he took them in and took care of them as best as he could. And some of his own children perished as well. So these are remarkably compassionate people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so all throughout this period, when they're looking for land and looking for places, they came across these big stores, big piles of corn that had been carefully, we're talking about maize, that had been carefully prepared and buried, and that were good for food. And so they didn't know what they were. They said, someone left all this out here and there's no one around. And so they looked around, they couldn't find anyone, so they said, we're going to starve, and took the corn. It turns out that was part of the burial ritual for the local tribe. And so when they found that out, they actually went and paid everything they could to that tribe for the corn.
Wow.
And paid them for it. So through that winter, it was very terrible. They didn't know. All they knew were the terrible stories of people being attacked and killed and eaten and whatever. There were all kinds of stories, many of which were false, some of which, you know, there were terrible incidents on both sides leading up to this point. And so they would bury their dead at night and disguise the graves. And, you know, many of us have heard those stories.
Yeah.
And so this is the winter. Well, by March, the Mayflower has to return. And so then, you know, they're on their own. And it's starting to get warmer. There are some greens to eat. You know, people aren't quite dying the same. At the same rate. And so then you have, eventually, you've got this tall, dusky man clothed in native garb who walks into the middle of their town and says, welcome, Englishmen, in good English. And it kind of blew their minds. And so they go out, and this is Samoset. He is actually from a tribe that was originally from the area that became Maine. And he was a sachem or a chief, and he was kind of attached to Massasoit and was one of his advisors. And so Massasoit sent him down to talk to the pilgrims and to say, okay, why are you guys here? What's going on? And so they found out what they were, and Samoset the Abenaki, he was treated well. They invited him in. They sat down. They talked with him. They showed him respect, and they just talked about what was going on. And so he went back and reported to Massasoit, this is who these people are. So Massasoit sends Tisquantum, who also speaks English, because Tisquantum is actually.
Oh no,
we lost audio there.
So
there you go.
Of course, that's when you have planting the corn with the fish, mm-hmm. and they start to have plenty. And so what happens through this summer, the pilgrims, or the Brownists, who are led by William Brewster, who is a diplomat. He's a diplomat. He was part of the diplomatic corps for England. And so God placed him in this situation where he understood diplomacy. And so he sat down with Massasoit as a king, which he was, and treated him with respect and negotiated with him. Eventually, they actually, after Bradford became governor, they signed a compact or a treaty that said that if anyone attacks Massasoit, that the Brownists or the Englishmen would help them, and vice versa. And so, interestingly, they bound themselves to that tribe, which you can tell from a diplomatic perspective that makes sense. They're out there in the middle of nowhere. They need food. They need support. And so, but they do have good fighters. And that's something else that we really don't think about. Everybody, I think, has seen, or a lot of people have seen, the picture of the pilgrims going to church, and one of them's got his arquebus, his big musket on his shoulder, right?
Right.
But we don't really think about the fact that these guys were trained. That's why they hired Miles Standish. And Miles Standish was a genuine badass. he was never officially part of their church, but when they were all sick, his wife perished. He never got the sickness, and he nursed at one point. He was one of the few people, maybe one of two or three out of 60 or 70, who could stand up.
Huh.
The rest of them were so sick they couldn't even get out of bed, literally.
No
and
kidding.
So he spent all his time feeding them over that winter, and he really became one of them and was well-loved by them. He and Bradford were great friends, and he actually became friends with many of the Indians as well, many of the Native Americans. So I lost track of the name of the Indian warrior who he fought side by side with for years and eventually lived in his house
wow.
with him. He became part of Standish's household, and they lived together for at the end of their lives and were always great friends. So eventually, of course, you've got the whole story, right? There was plenty, and so they had a harvest festival and a day of Thanksgiving. And many people parse it out and say, well, actually, no, the first Thanksgiving, the first official day of Thanksgiving, wasn't until, you know, later, like the next year, and that was when a Thanksgiving was proclaimed. But it's just foolishness to look at a bunch of Brownists or separatists and say these guys didn't give thanks at their harvest festival, that this was somehow a more, you know, sort of an English pagan thing, which is laughable.
It is.
Soon after that, it was about 4 years later, another group of Englishmen came and actually set up the first colony, what would become the Massachusetts Bay Colony. And eventually, and when you look at an old map, everything south of Boston down to basically out on Cape Cod and over toward Rhode Island was the Plymouth Bay Colony, and the Massachusetts Bay Colony was north of there, and that's where Boston was set up. But when these Englishmen arrived, of course, the Plymouth Bay went up and you know, tried to strike up a relationship with them and to have good relations. And it turns out that the Massachusetts tribe was, they had bad relationships with these guys. And history shows that these Englishmen had no respect for the native peoples. They lied, they cheated, they stole, they killed some of them. And so it was a very bad relationship. And it's remarkable. You have the same, it's not exactly the same tribe. The Massachusetts were a separate tribe. They were not allied or under Massasoit's leadership. But similar culture. And it's important not to paint with too broad a brush either. I'm trying not to do that. People tend to say, well, you've got the Indians and you've got the Europeans and these are two groups. No, not at all. That's kind of the point. You had a group of Englishmen who came and they sat down with the Indians and they treated them with respect, treated them as equals and superiors, and brought what they had to the table and said, what can we do to benefit one another? And for that time, all the way until into the 1700s, when finally you had King Philip's War, but you had excellent relationships there that were built by Brewster and his diplomatic skills. And then you have other Englishmen come and settle, you know, 20 miles away with the next Indian tribe who have a similar culture, but they are institutionally and geopolitically separate, and they can't get along with them at all. And eventually, Massasoit tells Standish, you need to strike first, because these guys are not just going to kill these Englishmen. They think you're all alike. They're going to come kill you next.
Right, right.
And so it was actually at Massasoit's urging that Standish went up and launched a preemptive attack on them and attempted, and it wasn't very successful. It was, in one sense, they did scare the Indians, the Massachusetts tribe, badly. And they showed them that, don't mess with us. And that was beneficial. But they'd already kind of done that. There was a sachem or a under chief to Massasoit who had tried to rebel. And so Massasoit called on his European allies, and they went out and put down their and said, you can't do that, and actually chased the guy down. And there was a scuffle ensued, and a couple of his followers were killed. And Standish actually killed one of them with his own hands, grabbed the knife out of the guy's hands and stabbed him with it.
Wow.
When they attacked him. So, and he would do things like that when they went up to take care of Wagonset, that was up by Boston. Eventually they were jumped, and Indians jumped out and had the drop on them, basically. And Standish leapt forward, grabbed the weapon out of the closest guy's hand and started fighting them.
Huh.
So it was remarkable. And, you know, in hindsight, many of those who hate God's law, those who don't want to see anything as a good Christian history, will criticize Standish for his role in going up and launching that preemptive strike. They fail to mention, most of them, that was actually at Massasoit's, at another Native American's urging, and that they did so because of their contractual obligation. Mm. Now, we can question whether it was a good idea. Standish was, by nature, aggressive. He was a little guy. He was not very big. But he was a fighter, and he knew that he could win fights by starting it if he had to, and he really did. And so, was it a good idea to go up and do that? Maybe not, because after that, all the other tribes outside of the Wampanoags, Massasoit's outfit, they basically vacated the land. And up to this point, the Englishmen had started to establish good trade, and there was benefit, and both sides really, there were things of value being traded. And after that, trade pretty well died for several years because there was no one there.
Hmm.
And so that was not a good thing. But it was also not a good thing for the relationships. And so we always hear, when you talk about the first Thanksgiving, you always hear big, bad, evil Europeans come
right.
and beat up on poor, defenseless, happy Indians.
Right, right, right.
Indian Americans.
That's a common narrative.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's pilgrims dancing with wolves, right? It's the same story over and over again. It's Avatar, it's Dances with Wolves, it's whatever. And that is such a ridiculously false narrative.
Yeah.
It pays disservice to the Native Americans.
Mm. What do you mean by that?
Well, there is the big picture that you get is that these were very simplistic, happy people who never did anything bad, but also were not very smart. They didn't really pursue their own. They didn't build themselves up. They didn't have trade. They didn't have things that go on that normal people do. When you watch, for example, Dances with Wolves, and I grew up there. I grew up with the Lakota Sioux. They actually sold my people, my ancestors, homesteaded there and bought land from them. And Dances with Wolves shows them to be somewhat simple. You know, they just aren't happy living out there in the Stone Age, and that's not true. They made with what they had. They traded. They invented things. They did all kinds of things that normal people do, that we do. They weren't so very different. They're not aliens.
Right.
And that whole narrative just paints everybody with a broad brush and says that, well, you know, this is everything has to be consistent with a persecution narrative because that has benefit for political ends.
Right.
And that's where that goes. So, you know, the first Thanksgiving, when it came right down to it, it wasn't super elaborate. There was meat and there was some grain, and the Indians did bring popcorn, but it wasn't
awesome.
Quite as we would see it. It was probably brought in leather bags. It was probably somewhat chewy because it wasn't freshly popped.
Yeah.
And there were games. The idea of there being, you know, some kind of sports on Thanksgiving, even though football could be a distraction and may keep us from actually thinking about the past and what this means. It is a part of Thanksgiving traditionally. There were foot races and there were shooting contests. It is a proud tradition.
Yeah.
Certainly. And it is a tremendous part of American history. But then we have to look back and see that idea of the people gathering together and corporately giving thanks to God when being called to do so by civil leadership is something that we still practice sometimes to this day.
Yeah.
And that is, you know, you can trace it up to when it became a national holiday and Lincoln and all this discussions with all of that. But this part of American history is deeply significant. And it's so important not to look at history, number one, as these super simplistic interests and, you know, and everyone was the same. But it's also important not to look at it sort of as this inevitable move that things are going on and we have small people who do small things, what's called the great man theory, right? There are a few great people who make decisions and that's all of history hinges on that. That is also a false narrative. That's popular. It was popular among Christians in the 1800s. It's still popular today. We tend to think of history in these big chunks, and that's not how it is. There are small individuals like us who make decisions that eventually, some of them, end up being very influential.
Yep.
So the decisions that we make on a daily basis, we don't know which ones are going to be. Sure, you know, some decisions are small, but you know, we can talk about Massachusetts history and why did the Battle of Lexington and Concord happen on Lexington Green instead of somewhere else? It's because there was a unheard of sergeant who made the decision to turn left instead of right when he got to Lexington Green.
Wow.
He had to be at the head of the column. So those kind of decisions we can look back at what happened at the first Thanksgiving and see those decisions as well.
Right.
We can see people who, like Brewster and Bradford, who were reading their Bibles and saying, you know what we do at the state church what we would call an Anglican church today, on Sunday morning is not what God commands us to do. And you know, what we do in our homes, based on what we learn there from our understanding, is not what God commands us to do. We need to live differently. Mm. They now, once they came to North America, they did hope, and they openly hoped that God would do something with that. This was tremendous sacrifice. Bradford later wrote that they had reports that the natives here would capture you, cut you up while alive, cook parts of you while you watched and ate it.
Wow.
That was the report that they had, and they didn't know any better. Turns out that probably didn't happen. Certainly didn't happen to the pilgrims. But that was what they faced. Besides the normal stuff like starving to death. And they wrote and said, we hope that upon our feeble effort, basically, I'm paraphrasing, but upon our feeble effort, we hope that God will do something great.
Yeah.
And they said that Bradford who said that he hoped that they would be but stepping stones to future generations. In other words, that they would lay down face down in the mud and have future generations walk on their backs. That was the mental picture.
I love that. That's great.
That's amazing.
You see that, that's what they were giving thanks to God for. So a tremendous amount of history. This has been tremendous fun. We've just barely scratched the surface.
Yeah.
I know. I know you have to take off.
Yeah.
Yes. But thank you for that.
Man,
brother.
This is great, brother.
Appreciate
thank
that.
You, brothers.
It's a fun story. I hope it's a good resource for all of our listeners, and grateful for all you're doing, brother. Look forward to this next year and the work we can do together.
Looking forward to it. Lord bless you guys.
Same to you, brother.
Thanks, man.
All right. Thank you. So pretty cool, huh?
That's awesome stuff.
All right. This guy, he knows his stuff.
I told you.
That's exciting. So, guys, what we're going to do here is take a quick break. We're going to come right back and have, I think, an important discussion. Stay with us. We're going to talk about, I think, truth and culture and Christian worldview stuff related to this. I think it's important to talk about the kind of impact that these believers had on the world and the sort of thing that motivated them. So we could just do a little chat about that, guys. But before we do, we're going to take a quick commercial break, guys. So stay with us. Excited about what's coming up next. Don't forget to go to apologiastudios.com, APOLOGIA studios.com. Again, hundreds of podcast radio episodes, radio debates. You've got, of course, Apologia All Access TV show, Apologia Academy. All that stuff is there. Don't forget, guys, to subscribe if you're watching this for the first time and send this out around the world. We will be right back after this quick commercial break. Welcome back, everybody, to Apologia Radio. Don't forget to go to apologiastudios.com to get more. Hey, since you're here, if you're watching this on Apologia Studios channel on YouTube, if you're new to the channel, welcome, everybody. I'm Jeff, the Calm and the Ninja. That's Luke the Bear over there.
What up?
If you're new, I'm just going to take a gander here just for a second because I'm forgetting like everything, but I think there's quite a bit. If you look over, find our channel, our videos and all those things, and I'll just run you through a couple things in our feed that you can go check out. Recently dropped. I think it'll help you to know kind of what it has been up the last couple of months. So we had a good episode a couple of weeks ago, or last week actually, By What Standard with Tom Askell and Jared
Longshore.
Jared Longshore, about the new film that actually should be out in the next week or so. It's called
Tomorrow.
Yeah, that's what they're doing, the premiere.
Yes.
Then it's the week after, right? Is that right? They're dropping that?
Oh, I don't know.
So
I can't remember now.
Yeah, it's basically they're going to do the premiere in Florida tomorrow, I think it is. And then the next week, they're going to drop it somewhere sometime. The film is called By What Standard. I'm very excited about the film. It's going to be looking at a lot of important things related to cultural Marxism, intersectionality, all these different perspectives that are actually now coming into the church itself.
Right.
So By What Standard is a film that examines that. Believe me, if you're like, I don't know what any of that means, I could care less, you probably need to start caring, and you need to find out about what it means, because it's actually impacting a lot of major Christian denominations and in a very, very dangerous way.
Absolutely.
You'll also see on the channel, What Does Romans Say? That's Pastor James White from ReformCon. The ReformCon videos are up and they're out. So if you weren't able to come to Arizona for ReformCon, we are putting out the videos slowly. I'm going to be dropping in the next couple days Pastor Luke's sermon from New Zealand. That's up, and that's from about a year ago, but better late
actually
than never.
Over
a year ago. So also, if you guys look, I want to introduce you guys to somebody. Luke and I would want you to get to know this gentleman, our brother, Dr. Joseph Boot, Joe Boot. His talk from ReformCon is up. I'm looking at the views right now. This was put up about 2 weeks ago. Looking at the views, it only has about 7,500 views on YouTube. That thing should have a million. That's Dr. Joseph Boot. He wrote a book called The Mission of God. Highly encourage you to get that. He's a great encouragement to us. He is a solid man. He is brilliant. And you need to listen to that talk. Recovering the Christian Mind will bless you. It'll challenge you. So there's just a couple things. But, of course, over the last couple months, you'll also see the regular sermons that have gone up related to the Olivet Discourse, the Great Tribulation. So those are kind of just in the feed every Sunday, like the passage in Matthew 24 where Jesus talks about the sun darkened and the stars falling from heaven. That is up there. I encourage you guys to check that out. We have John Sampson up there. We got Andrew Sandlin. We even have, of course, the whole film of Babies Are Still Murdered Here. That's up. If you haven't seen it yet, highly encourage you to see it. It's also on Amazon Prime. So if you have Amazon Prime, go check out Babies Are Still Murdered Here. Very important film. Exposes the failures of the pro-life ministry and the fact that the pro-life ministry is professedly, is that a word? Professingly not Christian in their methodology and foundation and their principles. They are not. And we have the leaders of the pro-life movement gladly singing that praise that they're not Christian and not pretending to be. So we want to approach the issue of ending abortion from a Christian perspective with the gospel, saving lives. If you guys want to know what that's about, go to End Abortion Now to get more. EndAbortionNow.com to get more. We also have tons of stuff. There's stuff here, again, Toby Sumter. There, don't miss it. ReformCon talk. You have to see that. If you haven't seen it, it's The Sanctuary and the Public Square. Toby Sumter, 5,000 views.
It's honestly the best message I've seen this year.
All year, my favorite message, for sure. You have a conversation between me and a moral nihilist at ASU. Check that out. I think it'll bless you, giving that guy the gospel, really unpacking his worldview. And you have fairly recently sort of a fun thing to watch, I think helpful also, is the debate with the atheists in Utah. Pastor Luke, Pastor James, Pastor Zach, and myself went to Utah with our whole team, our wonderful team at Apologia Church.
Yes, it was great.
To go out and do evangelism. It was one of my favorite weeks of missions we've ever had.
It was
good. And we got to preach the gospel in Salt Lake City to the Mormon community. And we got to do 3 days of discussions and debates. The atheist debate is up there. Check that one out. So that gives you sort of a rundown and a peek as to what's been happening the last couple of weeks. And a big thank you to all of our ministry partners that actually are all access at ApologiaStudios.com. You did all this. You made it all happen.
Hashtag truth.
That's what it's all about. So you guys helped us make all this possible. And people are hearing the gospel, getting this teaching because you are doing this ministry with us. So,
you know what I just realized? It's been a crazy week. This week is 6 years for Apologia Radio. Like,
is this the 6 year anniversary that we're at? It's just you and I sitting here alone.
Yeah. No, we don't have Joy with us.
Dang it.
Yeah.
We should probably plan something for this. Yeah.
I know. I just remembered. It's always the first week of December.
Maybe the 10-year anniversary would do something really special.
Yeah.
So 6 years Apologia Radio.
Yeah.
6 years Apologia Radio. 10 years official plant of Apologia Church in February, end of February.
Yep.
But we, Pastor Luke and I, have been doing this for 12 years. 12 years, right? You're starting to see
since 2008.
You're starting to see it. You're starting to see it in the line. Well, 12 years. Yeah, just about. You're starting to see it in the lines. A little gray edges to the beard right here. A little gray, and
you know what I just realized? Our 10-year anniversary for Apologia Church, we will be in Ireland.
Oh, that's right.
Speaking that day.
That's right.
On the
10-year. Oh, wow. That's amazing. Yeah, so we have plans, actually, in the works right now to help the church in Northern Ireland and hopefully Scotland.
Yeah.
To do ministry.
Southern Ireland.
Yes, and to do ministry toward in the area of abortion. Unfortunately, abortion, and this gets to the whole topic of this is perfect segue. Northern and Southern Ireland were kind of like the last stand in many respects. There are other places that have banned abortion as well, but it's sort of this last standing vestige of a nation that was once dominated by the Christian worldview and had criminalized abortion. People referred to it as murder. Time quickly changed all those things. And so we were there when Southern Ireland fell and caved in the issue of abortion and legalized it. And we've been praying with and talking to our friends in Northern Ireland for the last year or more about their stand against abortion. But now it's been forced upon them And now abortion is now legal in Northern and Southern Ireland.
Yep.
And so we are going out now in a different way than we did before. We're trying to help them to sort of stop it and hold it back. Now that it's legal, we have to go and help and equip and encourage in the area of abortion mill ministry,
right?
Essentially. And so that's what's up, guys. Pray for that, because that's an important ministry for Apologia. We have very close friends and brothers and sisters there in Ireland that are just godly, amazing people. Did you want to say something to that?
Well, I was just going to say that's the same tyrannical government that's forcing abortion on Northern Ireland is the same one that sent the pill. Well, forced the pilgrims.
The pilgrims.
It's been a long week. And the pilgrims out of England. Same government.
Yeah.
So, just thought of that.
Yes. So, we're wrapping up the show here today, but don't leave just yet, because I think what we heard at the beginning of the show today in terms of Christians coming over, enduring a lot of hardship to come and to plant and to build a community, there was a Christian worldview assumption in all that they did and all that they read and all that they built. And they were building with a mindset toward the future of the kingdom of God, the gospel, and the biblical worldview. One of the things that cannot be avoided, particularly in American history, I mean, all throughout history, but of course, what we're all knowledge about, it can't be avoided in American history that this nation was founded by people who believed in Christ and who held to the biblical worldview and tried to actually get the biblical worldview into every aspect of life. That was just something that was normative in the colonies, and so it was assumed that you had a commitment to the biblical worldview and all that you said and did. We've talked about this often, how the people early on in American history, as you read their writings, even somebody who wasn't a believer, like Benjamin Franklin, still went and listened to Whitfield, loved hearing him preach. Still gave money to Whitfield for his orphanages.
Yeah.
And you look at even some of the founding fathers and those people that may not have been either good, solid Christians or professed Christians. The assumption was we still need to obey this God.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting? People that like were on the outskirts, not actually in the church, were still saying like, but that's what we're supposed to, that's how we're supposed to live. The Christian worldview was assumed, and you look even in the early documents as colonies are founded and people are building communities. They would name the triune God of the Bible in their covenants and in their official documents. They name Jesus Christ by name. And you even see that in a place where Pastor Luke and I have planted a church, the island of Kauai. Hawaii's history is the same way. Christians went over to preach the gospel to the islands, and within 20 years, they're converted to Christ, and they name the God of the Bible in their foundational documents, in their constitution. 20 years of mission work, right? So it's just, it's, the assumption was there, biblical worldview in all aspects of life, spreading communities with an eye on Jesus, the gospel, God's truth, God's law, and we are in big trouble today in the West, right? So it was, I think, weird for Luke. For Luke and I, it was strange. Okay, we came into Ireland's issue at the tail end. So I went there providentially by accident from our perspective.
Yeah, right.
I was asked to teach as a Baptist pastor for a Presbyterian church's annual.
For legit covenanters.
Legit covenanters, their annual conference, which I thought was so beautiful. So I was like, yes, I'll do that. How beautiful is that kind of unity? But when I get there, I start realizing as I'm there, I'm not there to talk about abortion. All of a sudden, it's coming up everywhere. Like, we're in big trouble. And I'm like, well, that's our thing. That's our whole thing. So Luke and I went back, and we were there on the tail end of this whole process of them sort of like these last standing pillars of the Christian worldview that are preserving life and preserving human dignity, like the image of God, and criminalizing abortion, like these last standing pillars of the Christian worldview. So it's almost like it's like symbolic, right? Like Luke, I'll let Luke talk here, but when you go around Ireland, you see all the vestiges of the old world that was there.
The pagan symbol behind us.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Is everywhere.
The tricetra.
Everywhere you go in Dublin.
For those of you guys who are new, it's not really a pagan symbol.
It's a joke.
It's a joke, Pastor. But yeah, the tricetra symbol, crosses, old churches, like it all the old Christian worldview, all that stuff is all kind of hanging out. But we were there as like those last pillars are dropping. And so, of course, we were very saddened to see it happen in Southern Ireland, which is dominated primarily by professing Catholics.
Yes.
And to see them lose hold the way that they did was shocking to us. I didn't think it would happen, but it did. And then Northern Ireland just recently lost and on this issue, and the pillar fell. So now no value for human life, no reason to say there's any value to human life, and we'll kill our babies in the womb.
Well, in the North, it wasn't even something they lost. It was kicked over.
Right.
it was the government saying, nope, you're doing this. I don't care what you think, because they don't want it.
Yeah.
They don't want it. So yeah. I'm going to switch gears a little bit here, but I can tell you what eschatology the pilgrims did not hold to.
Yeah.
They were not premillennialists, I can tell you that much. I love the quote that Zach dropped right before he got off. Was Bradford or was it Standish? Whatever one he was saying, like they were, I think it was Bradford, he was saying they were willing to basically lie down in the mud and let the generations after them walk across their backs.
Mm.
I was like,
that's big time.
We've lost that.
Mm-hmm.
The church has lost that.
Concern we learned from the next generation.
Yeah, we don't think about that anymore.
Right.
And I was like, man, that's a powerful quote to think about. So, you know, whether they were post-mill or on-mill, they were doing work and they were thinking long-term. They were thinking generations after them. They weren't just there. Think about it. They wouldn't have left. They wouldn't have gone to Holland. They wouldn't have crammed 120 people in a boat or whatever for 2 months if they were ready to be raptured off the earth.
Yeah. Yeah. And the dominant, at least the dominant view of the future of the Puritans was an optimistic view of the future and the kingdom of Jesus. And so you see they were building, they were working, they were laboring, and the Christian worldview is infecting every aspect of their creativity, their art, their music, everything. And I do think it's funny, though. I'm glad he mentioned it, too. Like, did you see the article I sent you? Did you read the article about the Puritans?
I saw it, but I didn't get a chance to read it.
They loved sex and beer and all those things. People are weird about that because they think about that because the way that you learn about it in school is like these very stiff, unhappy people.
Puritanical is not a compliment.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, it's a bad thing. You're a Puritan.
You're a curmudgeon.
Well, the Puritans, you know, they weren't perfect people, but they were awesome people.
Yeah.
And I love that story about a person being disciplined by his local church because he wouldn't be physically intimate with his wife. So they were like, no, that's you had better.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to sort of come out of the spin you got in public school. I'm a public school kid.
Yeah, me too.
And so what I always understood about the origins of our nation and the Puritans, the Pilgrims, was something far different than what is actually true.
Mm.
So I've had to do a lot of undoing in my own mind in terms of really understanding what they thought, what they believed, what they were about. And it's nice to have him on today to talk about that, to talk about the real Thanksgiving, what actually happened. And it's an amazing story. Who do we have on before? We talked about Squanto. What was that? Well, who was that? Because that's somewhere in our history. That can't be missed.
Was it Elizabeth Warren?
She's like, my cousin Squanto. My cousin Squanto.
I can't remember.
I was the chieftain. So, well, somewhere in Apologia's podcast history or our show history here, we did a show on Squanto. I think it was with, who's the guy that has, I can't believe I'm forgetting this right now. The guy that has the famous history thing.
Oh, David Barton.
David Barton. I think it was Barton that told us about Squanto?
Maybe.
And the whole Christian history of Squanto.
What happens when you have 6 years of shows you can't remember.
6 years of show. Yeah, so go look it up. Apologia Radio. Just Google Apologia Radio Squanto or Apologia Studios in Squanto. That show was amazing. I remember I thoroughly enjoyed it because it was such an awesome experience learning about the Christian history of Squanto.
It's
trippy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like I need to start making popcorn on Thanksgiving now, too. That was a cool little...
Yeah, gooey popcorn.
Gooey popcorn.
Stored in leather sacks. Yeah. By the way, last night, we're ending here. We've got a minute and a half left, so we're going to tell you guys a story about eating calf fries.
Oh, no.
Last night, we have an annual time where we take the Apologia Studios ministry crew, and we have an annual Christmas dinner party together. And last night was our night, so we had everybody there, and it's nice to see that crew is growing. People who support and love this work and laying their lives down. The cultish team was there last night. Jerry and Andrew, Casey, his wife. And we had, of course, Isaac and Jessica and some of the kids because we couldn't get babysitters. And then Zach,
It was awesome.
It was awesome. Do you want me to tell the story of the calf fries?
I don't even want to.
Okay, I'll tell everyone.
I'm trying to forget about
it. It's fun. So for me, I see on the thing that I hate seafood, by the way. I can't stand seafood. I have a hard time with seafood. I can do fish and chips in Ireland because...
That doesn't really count as seafood.
Yeah. But, you know, so we go in this nice restaurant and all they have for appetizers is seafood. So I'm like, oh, bummer. But then I see it says calf fries. And I'm like, ooh, I'm going to order the calf fries. It must be like French fries with pieces of steak on it or something. And so I find out the calf fries...
It's not that.
They're not French fries. They're not French fries.
There's no steak involved either.
No. It's... Calf fries are calf testicles. Are we sure? They have to be calf testicles.
You're that other line.
Because I heard Rocky Mountain oysters are actually pig.
That's testicles. What I thought, but I don't know.
Jessica said I was wrong. So. It's weird that we eat these things as humans. But, you know, so we go to the restaurant, calf fries, they tell you, oh, no, that's like Rocky Mountain oysters. Those are calf testicles. So everyone's like, ew, no. And, of course, I was like, never. And then Jerry from Cultish, Jeremiah goes, I'm super excited. I'm super excited about eating these calf fries. And so so those of you guys who listen to Cultist, you'll know. And Super Sleuth was like, well, let me figure this out. Let me investigate these calf fries a little bit. And Jerry said, I'm super excited. So he ordered them, and he got the calf fries. And several other people were like, I'll go ahead and try some, like Joy.
Joy.
She tried calf fries.
While holding her daughter.
Who's here in spirit. Her husband, Matthew, he ate calf fries.
And your son.
And then my son was there. He ate calf fries. So we filmed it. But it was really, really hard to watch people eat fried cow testicles. Like, why would you do that? I can understand the pilgrims doing it because they're really hungry.
They may not have even.
I think maybe even the pilgrims were like, eh.
I'll take that three-month-old popcorn in the leather sack.
You haven't eaten for 2 months. Have some calf fries. They were like, meh. No.
Meh.
I'm good. Meh. So, yeah, look, Andrew Sonkrant, he's smiling right now because he knows. He was there. Yeah. So they eat them, and I was like, you got to describe, like, what's it like to eat that part of an animal? Joy said, you can tell it's not the normal part of an animal you would eat. That was her description. And Matthew said it tasted like what McDonald's makes their chicken nuggets out of. And Jerry just said it tasted like a bland chicken nugget, I think. My son said, I don't want to describe what I'm eating right now.
That was what he said, yeah.
Or something like that. But it was gross. So that's a story so you guys get into, you know, our lives. That was a story from our annual Christmas party.
Yeah.
And dinner was calf fries.
Yeah. The pilgrims came over on the meh flour, and they're like, I ain't eating those.
On the meh flour. They were like, meh. No. Man, so many of them died.
Oh.
And, hey, here's the worst thing. You've lived the East Coast.
Yeah, I did for 5 years.
You know how cold it gets in December.
Yeah,
they land
from Chicago, so that's not that
but
cold.
But they came over in December.
Yeah,
and
no,
they're trying to build when it's that cold. The ground must have been super hard.
Oh, it would have been icy.
It would have been horrible. What an awful experience.
Especially in Massachusetts. Yeah.
Yeah, Massachusetts. Massachusetts. All right, guys. Thank you guys for watching The Real First Thanksgiving. I am Jeff. They call me the Ninja. That's Luke the Bear right
there.
Peace
out.
God bless you. You only need some ketchup and Tabasco sauce for calf fries. No, see, Alan, let me just tell you, anything that you need to cover up with that much stuff doesn't need to go in your mouth.
No.
All right? Anything. You need to put that. That's like, let's continue this discussion here for a moment. Since you brought it up, Alan, I feel that way about lobster myself personally. I think if you have to cover, they give you a bowl of butter when they give you lobster, and they're like, here's your butter to soak, like your lobster is to soak the butter up.
But basically, I feel like the lobster's just a utensil for butter.
That's what I'm saying.
But it, yeah. I get what you're saying.
That's what I'm saying. So do you like lobster?
Yeah, I've had it. It's pretty good. I think you can get bad lobster, but.
Yeah.
I haven't had a ton of it.
But I just feel like if you have to put that much stuff on something, it probably isn't good. It isn't good.
I had a really good crab cake last night.
Did you?
Yeah.
Yeah? Mm. Yeah, and everyone had a lot of dessert too, didn't they?
Yeah, especially Isaac.
Yeah, Isaac was like...
Three desserts.
I was like, hey guys, there's a minimum.
Three.
I was like, there's a minimum we have to pay for a party this size, so just go ahead and get some desserts. Get what you like. Isaac's like, well, let me have this one, that one, and that one over there. I'll get them all. Right, Isaac?
I knew this was coming. I knew this was coming.
Isaac, how were all of your desserts last night?
Were they good?
No, they were good.
Yeah?
They were good. I was just trying to make sure we met the limit.
Yeah? Did you enjoy yourself is the most important thing.
I did enjoy myself.
So we'll know next time if we say, hey,
the food,
get what you
the
like.
Company.
Yeah, we had a great time with you. We love Isaac, by the way.
It's been a great year.
I hope next year for 2020 we can start getting some video content and teaching stuff with Isaac. Wouldn't that be nice?
I've been telling him to. He just won't do it.
Hey, you know what? Just as a hint, there may be a podcast possibly coming out next year.
Nice. We got a couple of things coming out
in the works,
year.
Yeah.
2020 is going to be a big year, guys.
Yeah.
All right. You dip the calf fries in ketchup like French fries. See, Alan, but what I'm telling you is anything that you have to cover in ketchup like that means you don't really like it. It doesn't actually taste
yeah,
good.
Yeah, you're just tasting ketchup.
Okay, see, so and then Eureka, see, that's what I'm saying to you. You lobster.
She has a point.
Lobster tastes good, but I have to ignore it as a giant sea insect to enjoy. See, that's my thing is that lobsters are the cockroaches of the sea.
Yeah,
right?
She has a good point. Yeah, it's basically like a scorpion in the bottom of the sea.
That's
and
right.
I hate scorpions.
The scorpions of the sea.
Yeah, there you go.
The scorpions of the sea. All right, guys. Thank you guys for watching. Enjoyed being with you today. Thank you for watching the real first Thanksgiving. We will catch you guys next week on Apologia Radio. ApologiaStudios.com is where you guys will go to get more. Get all the podcasts, radio shows, episodes, debates, all those things. They're all there for you guys. Enjoy. We'll catch you guys next week.